Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. This podcast is all about the strategies leaders can use to retain their most valuable assets, the human asset. I want to talk about how we stop human hemorrhaging and fully engage employees. First things first, I believe we need to stop with these broad generalizations about age cohorts. These Gen Z, Gen X, Gen Y, baby boomers, generation whatever assumptions and assertions that you have do very little to help us attract and keep the right people. Instead of focusing on that, focus on how leaders are leading, And that's what we're going to talk about. So let's start there. Leaders are pivotal in creating and advancing culture and climate in the organization. So the question is, how are your leaders doing that? Are they upholding the standards that you articulate in your mission? Are they committed to not only growing the bottom line, but also to growing the people that make it possible to have a bottom line? Ask yourself these questions. Spend a little time examining how you're functioning in your leadership role, and then look around your company and see what's the norm. How are leaders leading? Many, many, many years ago, Keith Harrell wrote a book called The Attitude of Leadership. And I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But before, I need to talk about the difference that a leader's attitude can make. Optimism and resilience inspire other people. If you're cynical, if you're gloom and doom, nobody in their right mind is going to work for you or with you. If you can't bounce back from adversity and focus forward, you're probably sending a lot of negative energy that does not attract anyone. This attitude factor is real, okay? I know it kind of sounds a little woo-woo, but it's real. Leaders have to try to be examples of a lot of really positive things. They need to model subject matter expertise. They need to model the ability to collaborate. They need to model a willingness to make mid-course corrections. That's all about humility. The leader's attitude impacts every single person that they lead. That means you have to be self-aware and check yourself with some regularity. How are you responding to staffing shortages? How are you responding to interdepartmental turf wars? How are you responding to stiff competition from your industry rivals? People look to leaders for signals of what's acceptable and what's expected. And that brings me right back to where I started. Retain and multiply. If you want to keep people, the work has to be meaningful. You have to be able to show people how their work feeds the larger system, how it even impacts the industry that you're in. You have to be able to help them see why what they do matters. I want to give you an example. A woman named Marcy, she's in academic medicine. She's been doing research on a very rare pediatric disorder. Her team's gotten a few grants and they're applying for more. She's been feeling dejected, and I think that's in part because of the person she reports to. That woman has been in research a long time. She's jaded, and she does not encourage effort. When grants are submitted and they don't get funded, she makes comments about how other parts of the university are getting grants funded and how talented those researchers are. And sometimes she'll go into a poor me and just a whole lot of things that are negative and that are impacting Marcy and the rest of the team. And this was taking a toll on Marcy, but she lucked up on a new mentor. And one of the things her mentor asked her was what impact her research into this very rare disease would have on kids and their families. Her mentor also asked her how finding a cure for that disease could impact other diseases. And these questions have been helping Marcy really recharge and remember the why of her work. You got to know the why. Because she's getting her enthusiasm back, she's also looking for a new job. She just landed a big grant and has decided that she wants to be in a different environment, one where she'll be supported and encouraged. So here's the sad thing. Marcy's boss lost sight of her own personal compelling why. Somehow she forgot how important academic medical research is. Her loss of zeal pulled the entire team down. And as a result, Marcy, a bright, talented person, is going to leave. The leader's attitude can't be minimized or overlooked because it is a factor in retention. It's easy to say that employees aren't loyal, but that's nonsense, and that's a scapegoat often, and it's often just not reality. I want to talk a little bit about loyalty, because I hear people bemoaning the fact that people don't stay on jobs forever anymore and people just aren't loyal. Well, here's what I think. I think loyal employers get loyal employees. It's a two-way street. Employers demonstrate loyalty in a lot of different ways. Things like how time off is accrued. I know a lot of companies are offering unlimited time off. And I think they do this because they trust their employees. Now, when I first heard about it, I thought that is the craziest thing I have ever heard. But as I learned more about it, I realized it is a novel concept. It gives employees freedom. It demonstrates trust. It validates the fact that adults can make the sound decisions. It also honors the fact that people have different needs at different times. To me, it shows real respect for the employee. This approach to PTO also impacts well-being. Think about it. If employees are trusted to manage their time off, they know they're respected. If they're trusted to manage their time off, that means they can decide how best to tend to their physical and mental health. And both of these are factors that directly impact well-being. Of course, unlimited PTO isn't the only factor that impacts an employee's well-being. It's much broader than that. It's about quality of life. The elements of well-being that employers should pay attention to include involvement in the world outside of work. Instead of encouraging and rewarding people for working ridiculously long hours, encourage and reward them to create time for family, to create time to be involved in their communities and in their professions. I love it when companies create shared opportunities for volunteering. That's a clear indicator that the employer wants people to have a broader view of the world than work. Also, that the employer cares about being a good corporate citizen. Another aspect of well-being that's important is compensation. Money matters, so let's not pretend it doesn't. Are you paying people in line with what the market dictates? Do you have salary discrepancies based on gender, based on race, based on some other factor? How are low-wage employees treated? Do they have opportunities for bonuses and other forms of financial compensation? Are they just forgotten when you're thinking about revising compensation packages? It's also important to look at the reward system. Who is most often rewarded? What's the criteria? What are the patterns that you see in the organization around rewards? This is going to be really important for us to discuss. So I'm going to be doing a podcast in the future on inclusive leadership, and we're going to look at these things. But for now, let me just say that you got to spend some time looking at your reward system if you want to retain good people. All right, I got to move along. Another way employers demonstrate loyalty is in the physical environment. With so many different teleworking policies, time in the office has gotten uncomfortable for some people. My niece was telling me that they're required to come in 3 days a week, but no longer have assigned spaces. That means it's first come, first served on space, on cubicles, on offices, on conference rooms. And she often finds herself sharing a conference room with lots of people. They're on calls at the same time, they're on Zooms at the same time, and that makes concentration hard, not just for her, but for other people. Whoever thought of shared space being first come, first served, didn't think it through. That seems small, but it's big because frustration mounts. And it's contributed to more than a few nasty run-ins between employees. It's also made some of them question whether they want a job that has this kind of hybrid approach that doesn't meet their needs when they're in the office. Poor decision-making on seemingly small things like space can lead to less loyalty by employees. Because the employer wasn't thoughtful enough to consider the employee's experience on their days in the office, subtle problems emerge and they lead to more not-so-subtle problems. Employer loyalty is characterized by policies, practices, systems, and services that demonstrate respect for and trust in the employees. I know I said that before, but it's so important, I'm repeating it. Respect and trust. Fluid communication between all levels of leadership and all levels of employees is another characteristic of employer loyalty. The most fundamental fact regarding loyalty is this: employees are only as loyal to the company as the company is to them. I know I said that before, but it's so important I had to repeat it. Employees want to be connected, they want to be engaged, but the environment has to be conducive to those things. There are a few things that companies can do to create tighter bonds with employees. The first is to invest in them. What kind of tuition reimbursement policies do you have? If you only pay for one course a semester, you're not really making much of an investment, so stop pretending that you are. Other investments include individual development planning. This is something I talk about a lot because it's so important. And this means that each employee will have the opportunity to work collaboratively with their boss to plot their professional development for the year. This may mean attending conferences, getting additional training, certifications, serving on committees, volunteering outside the organization, learning different jobs. There are limitless, just any number of ways to create comprehensive individual development plans. Now I want to address promotions. That is an important aspect of getting and keeping people. I don't believe in the heir apparent. Just because a person's been in a job in the number two role doesn't mean that they should automatically get the number one role. Promotions have to be earned. Employees resent it when someone is promoted just because they've been around forever, especially when they aren't even stellar. But there's a flip side. There's a flip side to that coin. People want to be in organizations where they can grow. I talked about individual development planning. Another form of growth is what I just talked about, this whole thing of promotion. So it's really a delicate balance. You want to promote from within when it makes sense, but when it doesn't, it's important to look outside of the organization for talent. So yep, we want people to be earning their promotions, and we also want to recognize when they can't and we don't have the internal talent. Pay attention to your trends. Are you always promoting from within? Why? What are the results? Are most of the people you're promoting from within really at the top of their game, or are you just rewarding them for sticking around? The other set of questions you have to ask is, it's this. When do you most often hire externally for key roles? And why is that? Why haven't you grown the talent inside of the organization? What is the message you're sending when the pivotal roles are most often filled with external candidates? Like I said, it's a delicate balance, and you can't strike the balance until you look at the trends and examine the rationale behind the trends. There's a book called Multipliers by Liz Wiseman, and I have mentioned it in a previous podcast. I really like some of the points that she makes. One of them is that leaders are supposed to be talent magnets, meaning they should utilize people to their fullest so that they continue to strive to reach their potential. And this means providing stretch assignments, not being so insecure that you won't let people do parts of your job, and intentionally creating opportunities beyond the scope of a person's job. I want to give you an example of that. Michelle works in event management for a nonprofit, and she's been there about 3 years. Her scope is planning and executing events, and she's great at negotiating with vendors, finding interesting venues, and managing event budgets. She's got a small team. They like her. They respect her. Dorothy, her boss, understands how important it is to create an environment where people want to stay. There was an opportunity for Dorothy to serve on a community-wide task force to address economic development in their region. It was a real high-visibility group, and they had a lot of potential to make positive impact in the region. Instead of Dorothy taking the seat on the task force, she offered it to Michelle. She knew Michelle would be a strong contributor. She also knew this kind of involvement would give Michelle a growth opportunity that she couldn't get in her day-to-day job. Interestingly, some of Dorothy's colleagues thought she was crazy for not joining the task force. But she had an ulterior motive, and she knew they didn't understand it. She wanted to show one of her star employees that she saw them as valuable. She also understood the importance of working hard to keep good people. It was a win all the way around. It deepened Michelle's loyalty to the organization, and it demonstrated the organization's loyalty to Michelle. Dorothy created the cycle of attraction that Liz Wiseman presents in Multipliers. Her goal, Dorothy's, was to fully utilize and grow Michelle, to give her recognition, broader community-wide recognition, to create opportunities for her with the full knowledge that these actions could attract other great people to the organization and that they'd surely give other employees hope that interesting things would be coming their way too. I said I was going to talk about Keith Harrell's points in his Attitude of Leadership book, and I never got there. So let me kind of redirect myself. I got deeper into some other things. I think I should review a few of the points as a way of summarizing my points in this podcast. I started by talking about your attitude, because we all have attitudes. The question is whether you have the kind of leadership attitude or posture that's attracting or repelling. Passion and enthusiasm, they are contagious. Are you loving what you do? Do you have good feelings about your employer? Keith Harrell says that passion and enthusiasm they're part of something that fuels leaders to walk that extra mile. It fuels people to do more. I think passion and enthusiasm also create energy and excitement that keeps people going even when the business is facing challenges. When we think about the employee experience with the leader, it's important to note the fact that leaders have to be congruent or in alignment. And that's another one of Keith Harrell's points. What you say and what you do have to be in alignment, but there's more. There's more to congruence than that. Your behavior has to be congruent with the company's values and mission. If you don't believe in what you're selling, employees won't believe in it either, and they won't believe in you. If the company isn't one you can really stand behind, if you're just there for the check, that's what you're modeling, and that is not a model that promotes retention. Everything that I've talked about related to keeping great people boils down to reciprocity. Loyal employers get loyal employees. By caring enough to promote well-being in your workplace, you demonstrate that they matter beyond just revenue generation. When you show them that they matter, they'll show you that the company matters to them. Make them matter by creating a lot of developmental opportunities that foster growth on both the personal and the professional levels. People seldom walk away from jobs that present challenges and pathways for growth. Yep, money matters. I said that, and I mean that. Be sure everyone, no matter what their role, has the opportunity to make a decent living. Make sure that there are no pay inequities based on gender, race, or any other factors. Make no mistake about it. I know that there are a lot of complexities regarding retention, but what I am seeing is that companies are making it harder than it has to be. Create a culture, create a climate that's healthy, where people are respected. All people, I don't care what age cohort they're in. Make people know that they're respected. Make them know that they're heard, that they're seen, and that they can grow in your organization. Don't think that because a person's in their 30s that they don't want to grow. Don't think that when they're in their 50s or 60s or their 70s, they don't want to grow. And don't think that because a person is in their 20s that they don't want to work hard, engage, and invest. Get over all of that ageism and focus on culture, climate, and leadership capacity. Drop the stereotypes and focus on making it a place where people want to stay, where they want to invest, where they want to thrive, and where they want to flourish. That is how you will retain and multiply. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.